All right, can you all tell us a little bit about the timeline of completing an MD-PhD program and perhaps the different timeline options that exist across the country?
So I guess I can start on that. For a lot of MD-PhD programs across the country, a traditional timeline would be that the student would come in and do the first component of their training in the preclinical medical school curriculum. That would last somewhere between a year and a half and 2.5 years, depending on what institution they're at. And that during that time, they're not solely medical students. They're also usually sometimes taking graduate school courses, doing rotations in research labs, or other things that that would help them sort of start thinking about what PhD program they might want to do their PhD in, and what mentor they might want to choose for their actual final PhD mentor. And then usually after that preclinical time, after taking USMLE step one in some cases, and in some programs doing a month to 6 months, or even in some locations a year of clinical training, students then actually primarily start focusing on their PhD work and do full-time work in their research laboratories, wet labs, dry labs, whatever their focus is. And during that 3 to 4 years, most students, although they primarily will be doing research, many programs also have mechanisms for those students to get continued exposure to clinical knowledge and clinical skills. So some programs have courses that students do during that time. Some programs have let students volunteer in free clinics. So there's a lot of differences in how the programs approach that continued exposure to clinical skills and clinical knowledge. But in general, we don't want the students to forget what they've learned in the first couple of years of medical school while they're in their PhD. And then after finishing the PhD, and in most programs, you actually do have to finish your actual PhD and defend it. Then you would go back to what would be the equivalent of either the third or fourth year of medical school, depending on which school you're at, and finish out your final clinical clerkships, your clinical acting internships, electives. You will, while doing that, you may take some elective time, perhaps do research and finish out a manuscript or something like that from your research lab. But in general, you're focusing on clinical studies during that final year and a half or 2 years. You will be applying to residency programs, interviewing for those programs, matching, and then getting ready and getting the skills that you'll need to go on and be excellent residents at the next stage.
Oh, this is Carrie. I think the main message there is that most programs are fairly similar in their layout, and the differences sometimes relate to the timing of the core clinical clerkships. Some programs have those occur at the early phase of medical training, right after the basic sciences, and there's some institutions that have condensed their basic science curriculum to a shorter period of time to allow that to happen as part of the regular medical school curriculum, not just the MD-PhD curriculum. And so one has to think about whether having those clinical experiences at the front end, which may help you think about what research you want to be engaged in, that's one option. And then other schools, it's more traditional in that you don't come into those core clerkships until after you finish the PhD. I think that's the major variation that you may see out there.
Here's another interesting question about the particular benefits of an MD-PhD program. What research questions do you feel can be answered by an MD-PhD program as opposed to only a PhD?
Well, I think that in general, any research question could be answered by an MD-PhD or an MD or a PhD. I think there's no real limitations on the questions that people could address. I think you're seeing research being done a lot more in this day and age in teams, which often makes it easy for, say, a team of a PhD and an MD or something like that to be able to have access to certain clinical samples or something like that that you might need to be able to answer specific questions. I think what makes it a little easier is if you're the MD-PhD running the research lab, a lot of times you actually have the direct knowledge of what are the burning questions and problems that you see on the clinical service, and that may help guide you or shape the types of questions that you are asking. But certainly anyone could ask those questions if they had that type of knowledge.
This is Skip. I agree with what Robin said. I'll extend it in an additional direction just to have more than one set of thoughts out on the table. When you train to be a physician, as opposed to a PhD scientist, there are many experiences that you have that PhD scientists don't have. You get to learn about disease from the textbook perspective about mechanisms and molecules and systems, but you also get to learn about it from the perspective of real people with real problems that you're trying to make better. And at the end of the day, that's what physicians are here to do, including those of us who are investigators. And I think that added perspective weighs into how many people pick the problems that they're going to work on, and then how they think about those problems once they've selected to work on them. So for example, my own research interests happen to be in hemostasis and thrombosis. That means bleeding disorders and blood clotting disorders. And I have lots of PhD colleagues who work in the same area and do fascinating research, but their knowledge of how it affects people and how to select problems to work on that are determined by the real problems that people have is much more indirect than mine, because I'm taking care of the patients. I'm seeing the kinds of problems they have, and that guides the kinds of questions that I ask and try to answer. So in that sense, it's a matter of perspective, an understanding, a deep education and understanding of human biology and human pathology, but also a very visceral sense of human disease and the impact of disease on human beings. That's the difference between being a physician scientist, whether you're an MD or an MD-PhD, and being somebody who comes to the world of biomedical research with the training of graduate school as a PhD. Carrie, anything you want to add to that?
No, I think you both have covered it well. I think Skip, you've really hit that perspective from having patient experiences. They in many ways reinforce why we're there to do work. They also can, as you say, shape those questions in very specific ways that would not be available to a PhD who's not seeing those patients. But on the other hand, Robin is correct that the specific types of research questions that and problems that are asked can certainly be asked by many. It really is just sort of a perspective on what that is. And I know many examples from my own experience, as well as those of other physician scientists, where questions that were very clear to them were totally novel to PhD folks, because again, they hadn't had that experience of facing a patient with a problem.
Here's an excellent question that I want to make sure that we get to. As physician scientists, what are some of the obstacles you face, especially dealing with knitting together the clinical and basic science parts?
How about that there are only 24 hours a day and 7 days in a week? and there's so much to do.
I second that. No, I think that we're being a little flippant, but the thing is that as a physician scientist, I think the hardest thing to do is the fact that you are, you constantly are making decisions about, where are you going to put your priorities? And you have to consciously, make a decision to compartmentalize when you're going to work on your research. When are you actually doing clinical work? How much clinical work can you do? If someone asks you to, do more, is that going to affect your research? And so I think, most of us love the fact that we go back and forth, but you have to be a kind of a person that's okay with moving back and forth between two different worlds, and quickly making adjustments, to your approaches as you go back and forth between those two worlds.
I think we can answer a couple last questions here. From Cindy, can you offer any specific or practical advice about the application process for students applying to social science, humanities, MD, PhD programs?
Do you want to pick that one?
I can start us off on that one if you like, because we have a bunch of social science and humanities PhDs in the MD PhD program here. What we look for in their application really parallels what we look for in people who are applying to get a PhD in engineering or biochemistry or any of the other biomedical sciences. We look for experiences that relate to the area that they say they'd like to work on, meaning, something that's relevant to whatever they want to get a PhD in. If they want to be medical anthropologist, then having some experience that as an undergraduate that relates to anthropology is very valuable, and the graduate programs here look for that. If they want to do history and sociology of science, ditto. If they want to do, it's not really humanities, but it's an alternative path anyway, which is economics, then, a background in economics and math becomes very important. In other words, we look for things that indicate that the person has been diving as deeply as possible as an undergraduate or as a post-bac student into the area that they want to get a PhD in, so that we know that their interest is not something that arose last week and that they really will have a sustained effort or interest in that particular area. So in that sense, it's no different for the humanities than it is for the, for the laboratory or computational sciences.
Okay, another question about career paths here. Do you commonly see MD PhDs passionate in global health? How can they pursue these passions?
So I guess I can comment just from some of our experiences here at UAB. We actually have had a number of students who are interested maybe not specifically in global health, but in doing research that in diseases that impact countries in South Africa, like South Africa or in South America. And so we have a number of faculty here at UAB who actually maintain research labs both here in Birmingham, Alabama, as well as in other locations. For instance, the head of KRITH in South Africa is one of our faculty members. And so we have students that are interested in those sorts of things that we work with very closely so that they actually can spend a significant amount of their research time in a foreign country doing research there, as well as still being able to complete all of their PhD requirements here in the United States. And so that for us, at least, we can often accommodate students that have some of those interests, but it does take some close communication between the mentor, the student, and the program.
Carrie or Robin, do you want to comment on who should get a master's in public health as opposed to getting a PhD in something that relates to that?
So I think the real question that sometimes comes up with should a student get an MD, MPH, or MSPH versus an MD, PhD in public health really comes down to where do you see yourself as part of the team? Because you can be a contributing member and really do some great work with an MPH. And a number of MD MPHs are leaders of research teams. But I think that there are also a number of MD MPHs who end up wanting to be involved in the research, but perhaps are not the one who's writing the grants or really driving the research. And a lot of times you see those people that want to have that type of leadership role are the ones that may go the extra years of getting the PhD in some type of public health. But I don't know if there are any other comments about that.
Anna?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I see that there's a question about MD PhD applicants have to be accepted separately to medical school into the PhD program at that specific school. Is this the same for the MSTP or is that a single admission process? So I'll take a swing at that one. In general, you apply to an MD PhD program and they coordinate your application with both the graduate program and the medical school. So you're not applying separately in that sense. But what that means is that your application is reviewed by the admissions folks in the graduate program that you say you're interested in, and they look at it and say, gee, this is somebody who seems really bright, but they don't have the background that we're looking for in this program, or they don't have interests that fit with what the faculty in our particular graduate program are doing. Or they look at it and say, gee, this person looks wonderful, and we hope you're going to bring them in so that we can meet them and interview them and make a decision about whether to accept them or not. By and large, what that means is, at a practical level, is that you have to take the MCAT, but you usually don't have to take the GREs in addition for a graduate program, although there are some exceptions to that around the country. Carrie, how do they do things with that regard in Rochester?
Yeah, sorry, I was had some technical problems here and just reconnected. So what was the question again? Oh, how does how do admissions handle? MD. Go ahead.
The question was that one of the folks on the line is asking that they had heard that MD PhD applicants must be accepted separately to medical school and to the PhD program at that specific school. Is that the single admissions process?
Right. Our school has a single admissions process where we bring students in, have them see the graduate interviewers and the medical interviewers, but it's really the MSTP that's making the decision to bring them in. There may be a couple of exceptions at our own institution. If you have a very specific interest in a graduate program that is not one of the more common ones that people come into. For example, we have a program in optics. We do like to get, very specific input from those individuals, and we sort of get a kind of a thumbs up or thumbs down before we would make a decision. But for the most part, it is independent of the graduate school admissions process at our institution.
Yeah, and this is Robin Lorenz. At UAB, when you're accepted into the MD-PhD, you're automatically accepted into our PhD programs. And so there is no separate application into the PhD program for ours either. And you do, at all of our programs do not require you to additionally take the GRE. There's a very few programs in the United States that their PhD programs require the GRE, and even then it's just a couple of minor PhD programs that require that. The majority of programs in the United States do not.
All right, I've got one final question here, and then we'll take some summary comments from each of our guests. what advice or how does the process change for non-traditional applicants, say applicants who have recently finished a post-baccalaureate program or applicants who have taken one or multiple gap years?
So maybe I'll start. This is Carrie. Quite frankly, if we look at the pool of individuals who are successful in applying for MD-PhD programs, our experience is that something on the order of half of them are exactly that, people who have taken some extra time to really delve into research experiences in particular, either through post-bac opportunities or working as a technician or doing some particular program. So many of our students, many of our successful students have taken the extra time, perhaps because they didn't have the full experience as undergraduates, to really recognize and demonstrate their commitment to the research area. So from my standpoint, that's a mainstream path, not an alternate path.
But Carrie, would you turn that around and turn it into a recommendation that people spend a couple of years after college in order to make themselves strong, working in a research lab to make themselves stronger applicants to MD-PhD programs, or does it depend upon what they've done before?
Yeah, Skip, it really depends on what they've done before. I think the notion here is that, if you've had the substantive research experience and you're convinced that that's what you want to do, then it's time to apply. And if that happens as an undergraduate and you've been able to work on it and had the experiences to lead you to that, then fantastic. Please apply. If you're not convinced, then you won't convince somebody interviewing you. And I think that's what I'm coming at it from, that having that extra experience for some people is important for helping them to make that decision.
Yeah, so I agree with what Carrie just said. I mean, I actually was just counseling an undergrad student today who asked me exactly this same question because they were hearing from their pre-med advisor that they really needed to take a gap year. And in reality, they had more than enough research because they'd been doing research their entire undergraduate career. They, had their grades, they had their MCAT. They had all of their shadowing, all of their volunteering, leadership experiences, etc. So there was really no need from the point of view of preparation to do a gap year. And I told them exactly what Carrie just said, which is that in their case, the only reason to take the gap year would be if they were not entirely sure that the MD-PhD was what they wanted to do. And if taking a gap year would help them to figure that out, then it is worthwhile. Now, the other time that it really is worthwhile to do a gap year is if you really need more research experience to make you a stronger applicant, or if perhaps you're doing something like a master's or something in the gap year in order to try to show that you can, do well in coursework at the graduate level. And sometimes that will make your application stronger. But just to do the gap year, because many people are doing it, is not, it's not the right reason, because you may be a strong enough applicant without it.
Great. Do we have any summary comments, final words of advice from you all, for our members?
I guess I can start out. So I think that one of the things that all of us who are directors of MD-PhD programs want students to know is that, in all cases, if you have questions about whether this is the right career for you or, what you should be doing to make yourself a great applicant, there is a lot of great advice at the AAMC MD-PhD website, where you can see some videos, you can see lists of all of our different programs and some information about our programs. There's lists there of summer undergraduate programs that are specifically targeted towards students who are considering doing MD-PhD. And so utilize that type of resource. Also, if there is an MD-PhD program at your local school or close to you, then reaching out to them and maybe having a discussion with some of the students there to get their perspective on MD-PhD programs is also a great way to try to figure out whether this is the right career for you and whether you're doing the things you need to do to make yourself a competitive applicant.
And this is Carrie. I'll definitely ditto exactly what Robin said. You know, part of this whole process is really doing the groundwork or the research to learn about what the career is. I mean, that's why most of you are listening today. And there are many ways to get that, but you know, one of the best ways is to meet physician scientists, to go out of your way if necessary to do that, and to learn about what they're doing and what their pathways look. As Skip mentioned, having an application that shows that you have and that you've been able to talk to people in those areas can be very telling about the amount of effort and investment you've had in that. For some people, that's easy because they're at an institute with a medical school nearby. For others, it can be more challenging. And for those kinds of situations, perhaps doing a research program at an institution with such people at it for a summer is a good kind of option for gaining that experience, as Robin mentioned. So yes, finding out as much as you can about it so you can make the most informed decision possible.
This is Skip. I'll end on a somewhat different note to add to what Carrie and Robin have already said. And that note is that being a physician scientist is a terrific career. And if your inclinations go in this direction, then you should head this way. It's a career in which you get to do lots and lots of interesting things with lots of other interesting people, where you have the satisfaction of being able to proceed in whatever direction your talents and time and energy will carry you. The sky is really the limit in terms of what you can accomplish, and you will get lots of encouragement along the way to keep doing important things that matter to human beings. If that sounds appealing to you, then don't let anybody talk you out of it, but just head in this direction and join those of us who've been doing it for a while.
Excellent, excellent comments. Just a couple of housekeeping items here at the end. As you may have noticed at the bottom of your screen, we are recording this session with the approval of our guest experts. We are planning to compress and chop up some sound bites from this recording to be posted on our resource page later. So be looking out for those if you have questions or can't quite remember what someone said, those will be available to you. Also, I love all of your great questions. I apologize for not being able to get to all of them in the time that we had tonight. However, we will have a MedStro forum open for a couple weeks after this session, which our experts have graciously agreed to visit for us and continue to answer some of your questions. So save your questions that have not been addressed tonight and please bring them to our forum. We would love to hear about them, and I'm sure that others would be interested in the answers to your questions. Also, I want to make you aware of some of the other benefits that membership in the American Physician Scientist Association provides. We have an undergraduate mentorship program, which I have personally participated in before, which is a great way to connect with MD-PhD students near you who can introduce you to some of these people who can answer more of your questions and talk with you at length about programs near you and career paths that you might be interested in We also have annual and regional meetings, specific fellowships and grants that you can apply for through APSA, all different sorts of resources that are available to you. It's been a very enriching experience for me personally, and I would definitely recommend it to all of you. With that, I think we can go ahead and end our session. I want to thank you all for being with us tonight. I hope it's been helpful and productive for all of you. And thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah, for hosting. And to everybody, good luck with your futures. And as Skip said, it is wonderful. So good luck.
Thank you, Dr. Brass, Dr. Abanian, and Dr. Lawrence for being with us tonight.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.